Now, joining you this morning, Professor Christopher Isikare, the Department of Political Science at the University of Pretoria. And if one just examines how China is giving the rest of the world a bit of a lesson in crisis management, albeit through a dictatorial state. But they managed to arrest the crisis very, very early. They locked everything down. They did whatever they had to, and they continue doing whatever they have to make sure that there's no reoccurrence. They worried about Chinese returning to the mainland and bringing that virus with them. And they continue doing, I think, some brilliant work to ensure that the country stays, as far as possible, coronavirus or COVID-19 free. Professor Christopher Isikare, thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, good morning, and good morning to your listeners.
So the juxtaposition of China versus, let's say, the diabolical response that emanated from the United States and elsewhere. If one does that juxtaposition, what does that say to you, just reading into that?
Well, it means that it's an opportunity that the United States has missed to prove to the world that it is actually a world leader in terms of, you know, hegemony and soft power projections. But they have not been able to do that. And China has actually stepped up and showcased its ability to manage crisis, and not just do that, but to, you know, sell an innovation of, you know, the political culture that works, you know, ability to manage a crisis, not just that, but also to show to the world that it cares by exporting help in terms of giving aid to countries that are still battling with it while it was still itself battling with the, you know, virus. So it's an opportunity for world leadership. And if we look at how, you know, countries have, superpowers have emerged, if you look at the history, you will find that we see similarities between what is happening now and what happened, you know, before. For example, according to the theory, Modesky's theory of world leadership, beyond the country's military and economic capabilities, you know, when it is emerging from a period of global war and aspiring to world leadership, it must offer an innovation, something to provide the world, the geopolitical order and security that the world needs at such a time. And this is what we need currently. We are currently, you know, in a global war against you know, the coronavirus. It's a different kind of enemy, but it's basically a war, and even the United States has designated it as one. So in that kind of situation, what is needed than anything else is leadership, a political culture that exudes, that gives admiration, that is exportable. And these are components of you know, soft power that helps a country to become a world leader at the end of a crisis.
Okay, but we talk about soft power. China can also be very draconian when it comes to its own people. There is no democracy in China. And a lot of people would say, well, that is what allowed them. Yes, they made some really, really good decisions, but it was backed up by a draconian, non-democratic, certainly not soft, state.
Well, you know, it was Patrick Henry, governor of Virginia in 1775, who said, give me liberty or give me death, right? We can't talk about rights and human rights and democracy for people that are dead. It's only the living that enjoy those rights. However, I agree that and this is one of the you know, self constraints that China has imposed on itself, you know, as a result.
Yes.
But we can also look at the result in terms of what we call, what I've actually called, responsible statism. You know, being able to step up, you know, to justify the essence of a state, and you know, and that also calls to question the essence of the liberal state. So if you put the two together, it's actually a question of state capitalism, you know, versus private capitalism, which the United States, you know, practices. The emphasis of democracy, of course, which China practices, versus liberal democracy, and, you know, prioritization of economic rights over political rights, which the American liberal system prioritizes. So these are two contrasting values, but one at this moment seems to be working and the other is not.
Well, indeed. And I think from where I'm sitting, and I'm certainly not a political scientist, But from where I'm sitting, what Cyril Ramaphosa, our president, has done seems to be a happy medium in between both of those. So much so that someone even suggested that if the economy were a virus, we'd be in a much better position. because this is his defining moment as a president, isn't it?
True, it is. Absolutely. We just hope that he's able to, you know, give more meaning to the economic aspects of the crisis. And, you know, once he's able to do that, then you can actually say that he's in between, you know, both systems that we're talking between the United States and China.
Mm. Now, I'm gonna leave it there, Prof. I just wanted to have a brief discussion around it, and I think what you're saying there will be backed up by this bit of audio. It came off CGTN, obviously, which is Chinese. But listen to what this particular broadcaster says about the way China dealt with it. Take a listen. It's a couple of minutes, but let's take a listen and see.
Sober up. COVID-19 respects no national borders, no social bounds, no political systems, and no cultural values. It hits us just as hard. It levels the world. Facing the pandemic, it is not what happened matters. It is how we respond. For almost a month, it infected thousands in Wuhan in a day, and every hospital bed was occupied. Now, empty beds and closed wards in the city. How did China make it? It is nothing new, but it's worthy to know. According to an initial WHO report, an infected person appears to spread it to an average of 2.6 people. And after 10 generations of transmission, with each taking 5 or 6 days, that one initial case has spawned 3,500 in matters of days. And that is what the world is seeing. What China did is to break the cycle by human intervention. The scale unprecedented in history. Extreme, draconian, and aggressive. These are the words used to describe China's response. But now, people have come to terms with the new norm, lockdown. Some people say, isn't that a violation of individual rights? Actually, the balance between individual rights and public safety is always an ever-changing equation. After 9/11, all the airports in the world began to impose draconian safety checks on passengers, and people accepted it because we traded a little of our freedom for the greater good of the public.
There we go. And I think that's the crux of it, Prof. You think it makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It does. It does. And, you know, they also use technology. That's one of the ways they were able to do this. And this technology eventually can become, they were actually intrusive. Mm-hmm. And I think what will make China admirable at the end of this and whether this can then become something that the world wants to copy and learn from would be how they manage this newfound power. Yeah. To go into people's personal spaces and lives and use it for the common good. Would they thereafter begin to use it for political purposes? Because one of the things they did was to use, you know, the ID system, the national ID system, to get into people's phones. And then they could use, you know, technology to track people's movements and even tell when people are sick. It could track people's temperature. If it could do that, it means also that they can also track when people are happy or unhappy about a particular political, you know, advert from the state, for example. And then they can use that to isolate supporters and non-supporters. And, well, we don't know what happened to non-supporters, right?
Yeah.
So if they don't do those kinds of things going forward and they're able to show the world that, look, these things can be intrusive, they can be draconian, but it was a time that called for this kind of, you know, action, and it saved lives. And it has also, this kind of thinking has been exported to countries like South Korea, although less draconian, but, you know, as effective as China did in terms of managing the disease, and, you know, countries like Hong Kong, you know, and Japan, you know. So they've exported these ideals. How it goes forward in terms of whether China maximizes this will depend on the American response and, of course, China's own contradictions, like one of the things we're talking now about, intrusiveness and, you know, limited rights. But again, we have to really look at the question of rights, like the tape you just played said. You know, we have to make choices.
On the other side, democracy is a wonderful thing, but people can also take it too far, like my right to go and jog, which is the biggest load of nonsense. You know, so they save lives and to thingamabob with your jogging, quite frankly. But Professor Christopher Isika, thank you very much for your time with the Department of Political Science at the University of Pretoria.